So faith is a thing that we use a lot in church. But it just means trust. And when we start talking about trusting God, that feels different than having faith in God, doesn't it? Because you start thinking about the number of people that you trust implicitly in this life. Is it more than five? For most people, it's not more than five. So when we have to actually trust God in our life, that's where it gets hard. He goes, if we trust that he's got us, though, I mean, the craziest thing happens. All of a sudden, we have this renewed strength to keep taking the next step, to keep on going, to keep on trying. When we stop trusting that he's got us, we give up, or we get stressed, or we get worried, or we get fearful. If we trust that we're forgiven, all of a sudden, we experience this amazing freedom that he gives us. We're empowered to live life differently than before. We're empowered to actually let go of the past. When we don't trust that we're forgiven, we're still back there in that guilt, and we keep rehearsing it over and over and over and over. Whenever we trust God, he kind of opens up the storehouses of heaven, and he just gives us all the cool stuff. And the cool thing about God, there's this phrase, we are saved by grace through faith in Christ Jesus, right? But that grace part is God's undeserved love that he gives to us. And he says, through that grace, he continues to work with us, to teach us, to encourage us, to give us opportunities to trust him with the more in life. And the more and more we trust him, obviously, the better our lives get. And so it should be the funnest thing in the world to be a Christian, because we're not alone. We got somebody who's with us, who's got us, and continues to work with us as we go through this life. So today, to kind of talk about this a little bit further, I want to talk about the four ways that God tests our faith. It's not usually things we talk about, but the reality is we go through life, God gives us opportunities. And the opportunities the test is always this: do we love God most, and do we trust him? That's it. That's the whole test, over and over and over and over. So whenever you come to that fork in the road where you want to do you or you want to do God, right, it's who do we love most? Who do we trust most as we go forward? And I want to do that because the more and more we live our lives trying to follow Jesus, trying to be the person that he's called us to be, trying to accomplish all the purposes that he has for us in this life, trying to be the person he's created us again to be, the more and more it becomes very evident that to do this, we need to trust him with the more. So to do that, I want to take a look at the life of Abraham today, because in his lifetime, Abraham went through these four major tests, though they may look different in our life, are the same tests that we go through again and again and again as we go through this life. And each one of these are forks in the road where we're either going to freak out and try to do us, right, you know, control everything, or we're going to take that step of faith. It's almost like taking a step across the line, right, saying, I'm just going to trust that you got it. And so we have these moments too in our life, and we're going to take a look at them, because I guarantee you, you'll go through them as well. And it's because we go through them, we need to be prepared for them. In fact, when I was in school, the truth is, when I prepared for tests, I did a lot better on the test than when I didn't prepare for them. Anybody else have that experience? It was very true with me. Almost every single time, it worked that way. But the best I did on tests were the tests that the teachers gave me the answers in advance. You know, the open book tests. Those were awesome. I did not have very many of those teachers, but they were awesome. Always did great on those tests. The other teachers were always trying to trick you, always trying to, you know, see what you actually knew by giving you these weird questions. But thankfully, God isn't like that. One of the things that you can know about God is that he doesn't play games with us ever, right? When God tests us, and when he tests our faith, he always gives us the test, right? The answers up front. He's going to tell us what those tests are going to be. And so this morning, I want to take a look at Abraham and take a look at the four tests that he went through that God uses to see if we're really a believer. And I say it that way because George Gallup says that 96% of all Americans say, I'm a believer, right? And yet, if you look at their lives, there's absolutely no connection, no influence, it seems, between being a believer and their lifestyle. And the truth is, that just can't be. If you believe, it's got to have some effect in your life, so much so that James said this, that faith without works is dead. And I know Luther didn't like that phrase, but it's actually a very true statement. It's especially in the world of psychology. If you look at behavioral psychology, one of the premises that they have is that everything that we do is based on what we trust in that moment. If we trust that we're safe, we act like we're safe, right? If we trust that we're not safe, we act accordingly. But every decision that we make is based on that truism or that concrete thing that we're standing on or we're trusting in that moment. So we sin because we think we're going to get away with it. That's what we're trusting. We think because nobody else will possibly ever find out that we're going to do this. So we trust that in the moment. Or we trust God that his ways are the right ways. Faith without works is dead. All that to say, this means if my actions don't correspond to what I say I believe, then that belief or that faith doesn't amount to much. And the truth is, we all go through this. Let's just be honest. We are all believers and unbelievers at the same time. Every time we sin, it's an act of unbelief. And so we're both of these. And so God wants to grow us so that we trust him, so that we believe, so that we have faith more and more and more as we're going through life, because we are saved by grace through what? Faith. And the cool part about God is he takes that little bit of faith and he saves us with it. Anyway, so let's take a look at some of these tests. The first one is the test of the major change. In Hebrews 11:8, it says, "By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go to a place he would later receive as an inheritance, obeyed, even when he didn't know where he was going." So most of you know the story of Abraham, or at least a little bit. But God at one point came to Abraham and says, "Abraham, I want you to go to this foreign land. I want you to pick up everything and just go." Doesn't give us a whole lot more than that, other than that God gave him that command. The only thing about this whole conversation with God is he didn't tell him exactly where it is that he was going. He just said he's going to be moving soon. You put yourself in that place, in Abraham's place, I imagine he had a lot of questions, like, where am I going? How long is this going to take? How will I know when I get there? Kind of like when I was doing youth ministry, and no matter what trip we were on, kids would ask what question? How long until we get there? And my answer was always 45 minutes. Didn't matter if it was 1 minute or 2 days, 45 minutes. But each time God, or Abraham would ask God that, he says, I'll let you know. So just kind of to personalize this, God says, we're going, go ahead and load up the U-Haul, get in the front seat, and I'm going to give you the directions on a play-by-play basis, right? And we'll just see where you end up. But I'll let you know when we get there. I think it had to be hard for Abraham. In Genesis, it tells that Abraham, when he moved, was 75 years old. And so not in his 30s or 40s, where a lot of people move, right? But much later on in life. And so I imagine Abraham saying, God, I'm ready to retire. I don't want to do this. But God says, no. I got purpose for this. God, I want to take Social Security, man. I want to just kind of enjoy my last days kind of thing. Just let me enjoy my life. And God says, no. I got purpose for this. God, I'm ready to relax and be on easy street. And he says, no, Abraham, but you're ready for the biggest adventure of your life. But his age wasn't the only issue. As you take a look at Abraham, Abraham was also pretty wealthy. And wealth has this weird thing of just kind of keeping us stuck. It keeps us not wanting to make those changes in life because we're comfortable, because we've got it, because we don't need to do all this moving, because we're fine, you know, where we are. And Abraham lived in a city called Ur. The archaeologists tell us that Ur was a beautiful metropolitan city. It's where all the wealth of the world was centered, actually. It was a beautiful capital. They actually have shopping malls that they've unearthed, actually, as they've been digging up this city. And Abraham was doing well there. He was doing fine. He had it made. He had sheep and cattle. He had at least 50 servants. There was no reason in the world to move, except that God called him and said, Abraham, I need you to go to this foreign country. And the crazy thing about Abraham is you read through this story, and if you're in the Wednesday night class, you know he wasn't perfect. He was a lot like us in a lot of ways, But the reality is that every time God asked him to trust him with stuff that he didn't want to do or stuff that was he couldn't control and stuff like, every single time he just did. And so it says that Abraham went. In verse 8, Abraham moved immediately, even though he didn't know where he was going. It says he left immediately and without excuse. Can you imagine God calling you today and saying, hey, Steve, I need you to move, you know, and you're just like, what? I don't want to go anywhere. I'm fine. I finally got settled down. You know, I don't want to do any of that. I hate moving. And God says, I need you to move now. And then immediately you pick up everything. You go get the U-Haul. You start unpacking all the stuff. You get some movers to move the stuff in the U-Haul because you don't want to do that. You know, you get it all in the truck. You see, the first test of a real believer is a believer will follow God's leading without knowing where God's leading him. See if I can apply this to your life a little bit. For some of you, God has asked you to make a major change in your life. You know it. It keeps hitting on your heart. You don't know what you're supposed to go exactly, but you do know you're not supposed to be where you are. You're in that uncomfortable place where you're asking the question, where, God? And test number one is all about the where questions. Where should I work? Where should I live? Where should I go to school? It's the where questions of life. But again, God says, a believer will follow his leading without knowing exactly where it is that God's leading. Let me give you some examples of this. There was a kid, a 25-year-old, this is about 15 years ago in our church, and it's just amazing. I mean, everything this kid did just prospered. He was working for some financial institution or someplace. He was making six figures, actually like 300 something thousand. I mean, he was 25 years old and he was crushing. He was getting promoted everywhere. It's just like every month or something like that. He was just going up the ladder. It was amazing. He was driving Beamers to church. He had a cute girlfriend, all the kind of stuff that you think of, right? And he called me one day. He says, Pastor, I'd love to take you out to lunch. And I said, okay. And as he sat down, he got real serious on me, and he said, Pastor, I don't know what to do. He He says, this place where I work, I'm very successful, it's true. And I'm sure from the outside it looks like everything's going great, but for me to be successful in my work, I have to lie in order to be successful. And it's not only do I have to lie, it's encouraged, and if I don't do it, I can be fired. And I've been good at lying. It's allowed me to advance in this company, and it's allowed me to amass all this wealth that I've had. But he said, I can't do it anymore. Not only did I grow up a Christian and know it's just wrong, I'm hurting people and their families, and I don't want to do that. But at the same time, I don't know if I can give up my paycheck, and I don't know if I can give up my house, and I don't know if I can give up all that stuff, because, I mean, where else am I going to make this kind of money, Pastor? He said, I don't know what to do. And he talked a little bit more. And I said, it sounds like you do know what to do. You're just afraid to do it. You're afraid to trust that God's got you in this. I said, the reality is that God's brought this act of conscience to you. He showed you that what you're doing isn't right. He wants to reclaim your soul before you lose it for good. He's calling out to you. He said, you're right. I guess I just needed to hear somebody give me permission. So that next week he went back and he told his boss he was quitting, you know. So they gave him a nice little box and walked him out, you know, kind of thing. And he went from making the six-figure salary and having all this stuff to having nothing. And you know, he saved a little bit, so he started looking for jobs, and he didn't have a lot saved, but he had some saved. And within a couple of months, he came to me, and he had a big smile on his face, and he goes, I just got a job in Michigan at this bank where I don't have to lie at all. It's not the same money, but it's good money. And I just needed to trust that God would have me as I went through this. And because he wasn't in that job anymore, it took so much stress and anxiety off him. It took all this fear of getting into a more serious relationship with his girlfriend. And so it gave him the peace then to go forward and move forward with that. And he ended up getting married, and they ended up having a family. But he had to trust God in that moment. Will I go, even though I don't know what it's going to look like? Well, I don't know where he's going and where he's taking me, but I know it's not right here. There was another gal that came to me one time, and she was struggling. She was in a neat marriage, and from the outside, the family looked great. But she goes, Pastor, I've been working at this place, and I started to develop feelings for one of the other people there. I said, what are you going to do? She goes, I think I need to quit. My husband's not going to understand it, and I don't know what to do. And I said, well, again, it sounds like you do know what to do. So she went home, and she kind of confessed to her husband, I need to quit. I love our family too much. I need to get out of this temptation place. We need to do something different. If you're a husband, you hear that, you're like, yes, let's move now. Let's move right now, right? So they moved to the other side of town, and she got a different job and did all sorts of stuff. But she valued her marriage so much that she knew where God was going to take her, but she knew she had to get out of that place. I think we have these tests lots of times in life. We get into situations where we know this isn't right. And maybe sometimes it's scary to venture off and do something different, or it kind of freaks us out and we don't have all the answers in place, but God just calls us sometimes just to trust him in those in-between moments, even when we don't know the where. There's another test he gives us, and it's the test of the delayed promise. In verse 9, it says, by faith, Abraham made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country, and he lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who are heirs with him of that same promise. Now, there's an important word here in verse 9. It's actually repeated twice, and it's the word promise. And promise is an important word to a Christian, to a believer, right? Because God says, I want you to base your lives on my promises. It's easy to not base your life on his promises. It's easy to try to take everything and control everything, except very quickly we realize we can't do it. But if you do trust and base your life on God's promises, which means to trust in God's promises, all of a sudden there's a strength and a freedom and a peace there that you don't get if you don't do that. The problem with this story, he says that he goes, if you move, I'll give you the land of Israel. The problem, though, is after he got there was a delay of the transfer in ownership. In fact, Abraham lived another 100 years, and he never did see the fulfillment of that promise. And neither did his son Isaac, or his grandson Jacob, or his great-grandson Joseph. In fact, during Joseph's time, they just moved to Egypt for 400 years. It wasn't a fun trip, but they went there. It wasn't until Joshua, actually, as you go through the history of Israel, that they finally took it over almost 500 years later. And that was a long time to wait, not just for Abraham, but for the kids that look forward to that promise, for the grandkids that look forward to that promise, for the people that were in bondage in Egypt that kept clinging to that promise in the midst of all that they were going through. And I'm sure one of the prayers had to be continually before God, when? When are you going to finally answer this? When is this finally going to be over? When are you finally going to move us across to the other side of this? Because this in-between stinks. You ever been in the in-between in one of your prayers? You're praying for God to answer and he hasn't answered yet and you're on this side of it or you're going through it. You don't know when he's going to answer. You're pretty sure eventually he's going to answer, but it's just taking forever. And this is the second test. It's the when test. When am I going to get it, right? When are you going to answer? When are you going to fulfill this promise of yours? I think lots of times, man, if I know there's a time constraint on this, right? I can trust him through that time constraint. Oh, it's only going to take this time. Okay, I can push through. I can keep on keeping on because I know there's an end to this, right? There's finally going to be an end to this and I can just push through until that moment. But it's much more difficult for me to handle those kind of tests that there's no end in sight. There's no ray of light at the end of the tunnel, right? It just seems like they go on forever. It never seems to get any better. It just goes on and on and on, disappointment after disappointment. But that's the continual test. It's the delayed promise. You know it's coming, but you don't know when, and it's hard. And so this is what God says a believer does. It says a believer, God says, will wait for God's timing, even though he doesn't know the when. Because he knows and he trusts that if it's God's plan, it'll be the best plan. I think about that a lot, especially when I was in my 20s. That was my when test. I go through a lot since then, but I wanted to get married, you know? I graduated high school, wanted to get married. When I graduated college, wanted to get married. I just wanted to get married. That's all I wanted to do, right? And finally graduated seminary and said, finally, I'm going to get married. And I was so excited to go to that first church because, man, that's where I'm going to meet my wife for sure, right? And so I went there and it was a congregation that worshiped about the same as we do, maybe a little bit more. And there was three single people in the whole church. Two were girls. I'm sorry, two were guys and one was a girl. And she was not my type. And there I am in the middle of Texas. I'm thinking, I'm never going to get married. This is horrible. I've been praying over and over for throughout my 20s. God, just bring her to me. I'm ready. And God's up in heaven saying, no, you're not. I still need to work on stuff, right? I still need to prepare you for your wife, and I still need to prepare her for you because I'm a lot, to be honest. And so just think about that. He moves me from Arizona to Southern California, from Southern California to Missouri, and then to Florida, and then back to Missouri, and then to Texas. And he says, that's where she is. She's in Texas. It would have been so great if he just said, hey, when you're 27, you'll meet your wife. And then you'll get married when you're 30. I would have lived my 20s totally different. I wouldn't have worried about anything. This would have been awesome. I would have invested more in my friends. I mean, it would have just been great. I would have wasted so much less time with other girls that just turned out not to be worth it, right? I mean, it would have been awesome. But I stressed and I worried the whole time. And then I got this person that, I mean, clearly she was meant for me. Talked about another friend that got fired from a job and then got a year severance, which was awesome, right? And he was looking for a job but couldn't find one. And months go by and he couldn't find one. And 11 months went by and he couldn't find one. And finally, in the 12th months, he gets his job. And it was actually a better job than he had in the first place. And I just remember him telling me, Pastor, if I just trusted God, I could have had a year vacation instead of a year stressing out the whole thing. When we're going through the when tests, just objectively, we know that if God isn't giving it to us yet, it's because there's a better reason, right? He's got to get that person ready. He's got to get you ready. He's got to get the situation ready. It's just not time yet. It's in the in-between. He's going to answer when it's the right time. And that right time is going to be awesome. But you're just in between. And sometimes he grows us in that in-between, and sometimes he molds us in that in-between. But the reality is, it's just not time yet. But if we trust him, we can rejoice and we can have fun and we can celebrate that vacation in the midst of life. Test three, it's the impossible problem. Verse 11 and 12, it says, by faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came his descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky and as countless as the sands on the seashore. So this was Abraham's third great test, right? God had promised Abraham that one day he would be the father of many nations, right? And in fact, that was his name, what it meant. Abraham meant the father of many nations. The only problem is that Abraham didn't have a kid and he was 99 years old. How many of you guys would get concerned at that point? I'm a little bit concerned. I don't know if I work the same way anymore. I'm a little bit nervous, right? And then I'm looking at my wife and she's getting up there in age too. She's past menopause. She isn't incapable of having kids anymore. I mean, I just don't know how this is going to work. So Abraham looked at himself and his wife Sarah and he said, God, there's no way. And God says, no, there is a way. And here's another just incredible thing about Abraham. He says, there's no way, but I'm going to trust you anyway. I don't know how you're going to do it, but I'm going to trust you anyway because you've said. And I tell you, as you go through life, I mean, sometimes that's all you got, isn't it? If you talk to Steve, he'll tell you it was an impossibility that they'd ever do 31st Street. There's no reason they would ever do it, Pastor, not any reason. So we just have to save. It's just going to take time. And then I cherished the day that I got to call him and said, hey, the city just said they're doing 31st Street. And it blew him away. The thing is, nothing's impossible with God. When Moses started questioning God, God said, is my arm too short? No. If you believe that there's nothing impossible for God, then you always have hope. You always have hope that he can get you through. And it's not always his purpose to give you what you want, right? He's the perfect dad. But so often it is. Because when he gives it, it glorifies him in your life. And you see the most incredible things done. When you don't give him that opportunity, you don't get to see those miracles. And so many of us don't because we hold it to what we can control. We're scared, we're terrified to trust him with the more. In Genesis 18, it says that God sent a couple of messengers a few months later to talk to Abraham, his wife, to tell him that what he had promised would be fulfilled and that his impossible situation was going to be turned into a miracle. And some of you, and right now you're worried sick because you don't know how God's going to do it in your life. You have this mountain that's in front of you. It could be a health issue. It could be a financial issue. It could be a relational issue. And you've tried everything. You just don't have the answers anymore. And it's gotten so bad that you can't see even how it could possibly work, how he could possibly fix it. You're in the third test. It's the impossible situation. And the truth is, when you're in those moments that scares you to death to trust in God and you're discouraged because you just don't know how it could possibly happen. And that's when you say stuff like this, Lord, I don't know how I'm going to make ends meet this month. I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of debt. I don't know how I'm going to handle all this pressure. I don't know how in the world you're going to get me through. I don't know how you're going to get through to my husband and change his attitude. I don't know how you're going to bring my wife home. She's been gone now 3 months. I don't know how you're ever going to get me through, help me get through to this kid of mine. It's really the how questions of life. And we get plenty of those as we go through. But it says this, it says a believer will expect a miracle without knowing the how. And that's when it's a comfort, right? To believe that we have a God that's more capable than we are, right? That has more power than we do. That it can do things that we couldn't even imagine or think. That's what Ephesians says. But when we put our trust in him, we see stuff happen that's just awesome. I can give you miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle that I've seen in my life and in this church. God just says, give him a chance. Knowing that he's the Father, and it's not always, right? But give him a chance. Then there's the test of the senseless tragedy. This test causes you to ask the why question. In Hebrews 11:17, it says, by faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it's through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. So most of you know this story, if you know the story of Abraham, right? At one point, this is toward the end of it, he asked Abraham to sacrifice his one and only son, Isaac. What was confusing about that is that Isaac was the one that God said all the promises that he had made to Abraham were going to come through. Like, this was the heir. He was very clear about it. It wasn't through Ishmael. It was through Isaac. It was only through Isaac. And he loved this boy. Imagine just having the one son, but then having all these promises attached to this one son. I mean, this was his pride and joy. And God just comes out of nowhere, out of the blue, and says, boom, I need you to sacrifice your son. Think about that. Could you do it? I don't know, right? You'd like to think you could obey God in anything, but that's a pretty tall order. It was crazy, and it was without precedent. There was nothing that he knew about God in all of his experiences that would have set him up for this kind of expectation. Sure, there was sacrificing kids in other parts of his world at that time, but not with God. He hated murder. Why would God ask him? And he was just floored by the whole experience. Why would God ask a father to sacrifice his own son? And yet the Bible says that Abraham, and this is, again, you just look at him and you're dumbfounded. He just obeyed. It says the next morning he got up with the fire and the knife and the wood and the sun, and they just headed on off from Mount Moriah. He chose a mountain that was 2 days away, strategically maybe, but he just headed off, right? He obeyed immediately. Could you have done that? In verse 19, he gives us a little window into what he was thinking on that trip. It says that after thinking this through, Abraham decided that this basic truth in life, The reason that God had a right to make any demand on his life he so wished, because whether he liked it or not, God was still God and he was still him. God had made us. We wouldn't even be here if it weren't for God. Therefore, everything I have or will have is owed to God. So any demand he makes on my life, I don't have any reason or right to disobey. Can you imagine the maturity in that kind of reasoning? It'd be insane, wouldn't it? But he had to go through that at some point, or he wouldn't have left next morning. He decided, I'm going to obey God because he's always been good to me, because he's never lied to me, because he's given me all these promises, and I have no idea what this is about, but I'm just going to trust him. Abraham also figured that if God could give him a miracle son at age 100, he could also possibly raise him from the dead. So in a way, he expected a resurrection, is what Hebrews says. But that was his confidence, right? You're heading on off thinking you're going to kill your son, hoping that God resurrects the boy, because that's the only thing that makes sense with all the promises that he made through and about his son. And that's faith. And the strange thing about God's tests and the secret to acing them, right, is not really knowing all the answers, but despite not knowing any of the answers at times, you still trust him anyway. In fact, that's the test. Do you trust me? Do you love me most? And wasn't that what the final result of that test to Abraham was? He says, stay your hand. He has the knife over his kid. Oh, I can't even imagine. And God says, stay your hand, Abraham. Now I know you love me most. You know, we throw around the name God, but God just means that he's the one we love the most. That he's the one we trust the most. And let's just be honest, we stink at that. But that's his call, and the more we trust him, the more of the good stuff we experience, and the more of the peace, and more of the joy, and more of the freedom that we experience. It's just awesome, the more and more and more we trust him. And we trust him in the midst of life, knowing that he's always working for our good and his glory. We trust him knowing that he's on our side. We trust him knowing that he's got us. And that's the challenge of being a disciple, isn't it? One of my favorite verses is Mark 9, verse 24. It says, a man came to Jesus who was desperately ill. And Jesus said, do you want to be healed? And the man said, yes. And Jesus said, do you believe? And the man's answer was kind of classic. He said, Lord, I believe. Help me with my unbelief. But the cool thing is that's all you need to begin a life of faith. Lord, I believe that you forgive me, that there's heaven. If you think about that box of the stuff you put that you believe God for, I believe that you love me most of the time. I believe that you've got me most of the time. Help me believe more and more. And do you know what God did on the basis of that? He healed his son. He said, that's a great place to start. I love it. But this is where we say stuff like this. Lord, I don't know where, but I'm going to believe in you. I'm going to trust you. Help me with my doubts. And Lord, I don't know how we're going to get out of this situation. I don't know how you're going to do it, but I'm going to believe, so help me with my worries. And Lord, I don't know the where's or the when's at all right now, so help me with my fears. And Lord, I don't know why, but I'm going to trust your love. I'm going to trust that you've got purpose in this. I'm going to trust that you've got a better answer than what I'm looking at. And that's where he starts. God takes us where we are, and he continues to love us through this process of becoming, right, the person that he wants us to be. And the soul who rejoices in this knowledge that we are forgiven and loved by an amazing God, all for the purpose, right, so that he can get us to trust him more and more and more as we go through this life. Not just for heaven, but for our own peace sake. Not just for heaven, but for the strength we need to keep on going, for the keep on trusting, to keep on believing in the midst of a world that shares everything that seems to be opposite. To keep on trusting so that we can finally leave our past in the past and receive that freedom that comes from forgiveness. God wants us to have the good stuff. But so often we get comfortable, right? And so he gives us these tests to kind of push us over the line, so that we trust him with the more. Let me pray. God, we love you so much, and we thank you for Jesus, and we thank you for pursuing us with your love. I like that phrase because that's what you do. You don't just leave it up to us because that would be good, because we're a mess and we're stubborn and all sorts of stuff, but you keep on pursuing us. Keep on reminding us that you've got us. Keep on comforting us in the midst of pain, in the midst of worry. Keep on showing us your power. Keep on giving us that forgiveness that allows us to dust ourselves off and move forward in a different way. Father, thank you so much for continuing to pursue us with that love, for continuing to remind us of the love that you won for us in Jesus. And that's what we pray today, and that's what we celebrate today. And we pray that in his name too. And all God's people said, amen.